once said about what jazz meant to him, one of the reasons I believe in jazz is that the oneness of man can come through the rhythm of your heart. It's the same any place in the world, that heartbeat. It's the first thing you hear when you're born or before you're born, and it's the last thing you hear. Dave Brubeck died yesterday. Today would have been his 92nd birthday. He was on his way to see his cardiologist. And we are listening to his music today, as we will for many, many years to come, and examining his rather extraordinary life, the world of jazz, the world of different kinds of rhythms for jazz, the influence that he had on other musicians, and why it is that even if you didn't like jazz, when we play Take Five later this hour, you'll know Take Five and you'll say, oh, yeah, I like that. So he introduced, I think, a lot of people in this country and probably in the world to jazz. We talk about Dave Brubeck this hour of our program, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. I'm sure that many of you have, as I did, a chance to hear him in concert. I heard him in Chicago back when I was a teenager many, many years ago. We're going to talk about his influence. He was a jazz pianist. He was a composer. He was a band leader. He was in World War II. He composed all kinds of music. In addition to piano compositions, he recorded a mass. He recorded music for jazz groups. He led a 12-piece band. He was a classical musician as well. Just an extremely talented man. Joining us to talk about his life is Mark Davis. Mark is also a jazz pianist. He is chair of jazz studies at the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music. He serves as an instructor at Cardinal Stritch University, Wisconsin Lutheran College, and Alverno College as well. Mark is one of the Midwest's most accomplished jazz pianists. And Mark, we thank you so much for being with us on this day. When I saw the news yesterday, I just looked at my computer and said, oh no, Dave Brubeck has died. And then I immediately listened to Take Five. I put it right up and listened to the whole thing.
Sure.
There were many of us, I think, who were introduced to jazz and grew to love jazz because of Dave Brubeck.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was certainly a loss for the jazz world, but we're, of course, happy that he was around so long and did so much great music during his lifetime and left quite a legacy.
He started, I know, studying classical music early on in his life. Do a lot of, yourself included, jazz musicians have a classical kind of background?
I would say most do, you know, and it seems, you know, if we think about all the great pianists, you know, guys even back to people like Earl Hines or maybe somebody like Bill Evans, you know, a lot of these people had, you know, they were a very accomplished classical musicians, you know, and then from there, that was sort of a springboard to be able to get into other kinds of music. And, you know, and that's still the case for a lot of players. Certainly not all jazz musicians. Some jazz musicians come from a different kind of background. But jazz is a music that really incorporates so many different influences. And I think what I love about jazz is I think it tries to take the best from so many different sources, classical music, ethnic music, you know, traditions from all parts of the world, and that's something that Dave Brubeck did, and one of the things that I think made him a significant artist and significant jazz pianist.
Mm-hmm. And what was it about his particular music that made him kind of a crossover artist, if that's the correct word, so that people really were introduced to jazz? And Take Five was a huge bestseller in this country.
Right.
There probably weren't a whole lot of jazz songs since then that have been.
You know, I've been thinking about that, you know, just since, you know, his passing and just thinking about his influence and certainly the fact that he was so popular, and he's one of the few jazz musicians that was a household name. You know, unfortunately, there's many great players, but unfortunately, many of them are not known to the general public, but you know, Brubeck was somebody who was known, and he was, you know, very successful. And of course, like you mentioned, Take Five is a tune that just about everybody would recognize, and most people would, you know, be able to name, you know, know that that's Take Five. Of course, that was written by his saxophone player Paul Desmond, but you know, we really associate that tune with Dave Brubeck because, of course, his group recorded it, and we identify that with him. But I think the thing that made him, maybe that made that tune popular, and I think the year that came out was 1959, which was sort of a magic year in jazz. There were a lot of incredible things happening in the music at that time. Not only did Brubeck come out with his Time Out album, the album that featured Take Five, it was the same year that Miles Davis came out with his album Kind of Blue, which mm-hmm. is also one of the biggest selling jazz albums and most influential albums of all time. And John Coltrane in that same year came out with his album Giant Steps. So it was really an incredible time for jazz and significant. And, you know, I unfortunately never had a chance to hear Dave Brubeck live, and I certainly didn't hear him back in 1959 because I wasn't alive yet. But you know, it makes me wonder if maybe people's ears were a little bit more open to innovation at that time, perhaps, than they are now. That just naming those three albums that were all really significant and innovative in different ways, you know, all came out in the same year and became albums that are you know, continue to be popular albums. You know, maybe there was something about the time period that people were open to that. I mean, as far as a tune like Take Five, you know, musicians know that the thing that makes it unique is that he was using a different time signature than what was popular in jazz at the time. And so for people who are non-musicians, when we talk about time signatures, we're talking about the rhythm of the music, the meter. Most jazz is played in 4/4 time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's music that you could snap your fingers to on 2 and 4. Most music that people are familiar with is in 4/4 time signature. Of course, a waltz is in 3/4, so we're talking about notes that are grouped in, or beats that are grouped in three-note groupings. But Take Five was in 5. That was the meter. It was 5/4 meter. So rhythmically, it had a whole different feel, and I think it must have really caught people's ears, and I think it still does because it's unique. It's different. It's different rhythmically than what you typically hear, although melodically, you know, the melody to Take Five, that opening part is something that comes out of the blues scale, something very basic in a way, something that's, you know, soulful. So he combined something that was sort of, in a way, intellectual, the meter, the 5/4 meter, with something that was more basic and that people could identify with.
All right, well, we can't help ourselves. We have to hear some of it now.
Yeah,
we'll play
absolutely.
More of it at the end. But you've explained this so well. Let's listen to a little bit of Dave Brubeck's Take Five. Dave Brubeck and Take Five in 5/4 time. And yet, for those who were not listening to a lot of jazz and hearing this in 5/4 instead of 4/4, that song, you're on a beach somewhere and the waves are crashing over you and the sun is shining and you're in heaven when you hear that song. It's easy on our ears, isn't it? It's easy on our bodies.
Yeah, and as you know, sometimes Brubeck's music and the music of Paul Desmond, the saxophone player that he worked with that wrote Take Five, sometimes we call their music cool jazz or associate it with West Coast jazz that was coming out in California that had that kind of maybe a little bit more carefree kind of easygoing feel to it. And yeah, I think that that tune epitomizes a lot of that, and it's in contrast to things that you might hear that were happening on the East Coast in New York and other cities that maybe had a little harder edge and maybe a little bit more tension or a little bit more fiery kind of sound mm-hmm. to it. West Coast was a little more laid back.
And I read somewhere that he came up with these different rhythms because of trips that he took to India and right. various countries and was captivated by a different time signature. Is that true?
Yeah, I believe so. And he took a tour to India in the Mideast, where he heard musicians, you know, even on the street playing, you know, traditional kinds of music. And, you know, over there, 4/4 is not the common thing. They're playing in all kinds of, you know, what we would call odd meters, unusual time signatures, unusual to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was fascinated by it. And I read a little anecdote where he asked one of these musicians, like, how can you do that? You know, and he said, well, you know, to us, this is like the blues is to you. In other words, they grow up with it, and it's something that they're comfortable with. And he was certainly fascinated with meter and rhythm. And, of course, Blue Rondo a la Turk was a tune that he was also included on the same album that featured Take Five, and that was another one that had an unusual time signature. It was in 9/9/8, I believe.
Let's listen to some.
9 beats per measure.
9/8. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
Great.
Dave Brubeck, his composition, Blue Rondo a la Turk. Is it hard to play that 9/8 beat?
It's really,
Mark?
Really hard.
Is it?
Jazz, a lot of jazz musicians still, you know, mostly play in 4/4 time signature. But you know, when Brubeck started doing this back in the 50s, you know, there was certainly, I'm not really sure if there were other musicians experimenting with it to the extent that he was. But it's interesting that now, with today's jazz scene and you know, the young great players that are coming up, playing in these unusual time signatures is a big aspect of what a lot of new players are doing. It's becoming more and more common. So for really like a young jazz musician coming up, you know, it's becoming important that they address how to play in these weird time signatures.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, it's really difficult. But it's something that jazz musicians are doing much more of, and it's become a big part of the music. And I think it's something that does stem back to Brubeck, and it's one effect that his music had on today's scene. You know, it goes all the way back to that Time Out album way back in 59.
Let's go to, we want to welcome phone calls, reminiscences of Dave Brubeck. I'm sure there are people in this audience who heard him play somewhere because he had such a long career. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Ray in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, you've been talking a lot about the meters and the rhythmic and the number aspect of Dave Brubeck and what kind of made him special. But I want to talk more about the texture of his music and the tone the band had. I was an electric musician, you know, playing rock guitar, really getting into Jimi Hendrix and Jeff Beck and Eric Clapton, people like that. And somebody one day put on Jazz Impressions of Japan, the Dave Brubeck Quartet. And I was like, wow, what is that tone there? You know, it's like this velvety, sweet Paul Desmond sax against this, like, dry, woody sound of the rest of the band. And you could, like, feel it.
Let's
and I was just blown away by it. And that is really my favorite Dave Brubeck record is Jazz Impressions of Japan.
All right, stay with us, Ray. We're going to play a little bit of it, okay? So then we can talk about it, but let's hear it. It's really East and West, isn't it, Ray?
Yeah, it's just, it's really timeless. And the musicians now, as I've gotten older, that really have had an impression on me are people like this, where it's more the tone, like Miles Davis. I did see Miles Davis once here in Milwaukee, and the tone. There's a bass player, Jaco Pastorius, who just, it's like their tone is so heavy, it just took me to another place, and, yeah. And I'm really glad you're doing this show, and I hope somebody else calls in with their impressions of Dave Brubeck.
Yes, they will. Great. Thank you, Ray, very much,
Ray,
for the call.
Ray brings up a great point about Brubeck and maybe what made, you know, his work with Paul Desmond so interesting and grab people's ears. Like Ray said, the contrast between what Paul Desmond did and, like Ray was saying, he had that incredibly smooth, pure tone. And, you know, a lot of the saxophone players on the West Coast at that time were heavily influenced by Lester Young, who was a tenor saxophone player who worked with Count Basie in the 1930s and was this really laid-back kind of player. And a lot of these guys, like Paul Desmond, really, and Stan Getz was another guy that these guys idolized Lester Young's playing, and they got that incredibly beautiful, smooth, pure tone. And then to hear that, like Ray said, you know, sort of in contrast to Brubeck, who was often like very percussive and did a lot with chords and was real rhythmic, it was a great pairing. It was a great, they were foils for each other. And I think that's something that we find in a lot of the great jazz groups is that, you know, we'll have, you know, Miles Davis paired with John Coltrane. You know, when you have that kind of contrast, it makes for great music and interesting music where people are playing off each other but approaching things in a different way.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dave Brubeck and Unsquare Dance. Can you comment on John's comment that this selection is still groundbreaking after all these years? Would you describe it as such, Mark?
Well, yeah. Here again, you know, it's a piece that uses what musicians call an odd time signature. This one is in 7. So, you know, we talked about Take 5 was in 5, and Blue Rondo a la Turk in 9, and now we've got something in 7. You know, and you know, if we listen further into the tune, the tune has it's almost like a square dance, but mm-hmm. it's an unsquare dance. So it's pretty a funny title that he came up with, you know, and concept for the tune. And actually, I actually played this tune many, many times. I had a gig in the early '90s at a restaurant, Heaven City, which is I guess it's Maguanago, and we had a trio gig there a few nights a week, The chef and owner loved this tune. It was his favorite tune, so it was sort of a requirement of the gig that we had to play that tune every night. So, so for several years, we played it, and so I know it well, and it's fun. It's tricky. It's tricky to play in those odd time signatures. And here again, it's, you know, Brubeck was a really intellectual guy, and he was playing complicated music, but he still found a way to, you know, make his music popular with the public. You mm-hmm. know, that was ingenious that he could, you know, combine the two.
You almost wonder, I want to get to the question now, of whether this talent is sort of part of your genetic structure or whether or not it can be nurtured. I was just amazed that he had all these sons who were also jazz musicians and still are, and he helped form some of their quartets. How can you have so many musicians in the same family? Is it genetic?
Yeah, it sure seems that way, right?
It does.
Yeah, I mean, all his kids play, and you know, and we see that. There's a lot of musical families in jazz. Like the Montgomery brothers and other people who are, you know, just, you wonder what's in the water. How are they all, you know, coming out like that? I actually had a chance to talk with Wynton Marsalis. Maybe it was about a year ago. He popped in. He was in town and popped in at a gig I was playing. And it was a treat to be able to talk to him. And we were sitting around talking. We asked him, well, how did the Marsalises all become, you know, such great musicians? As people know, Wynton's father, Ellis, is a great pianist. And, of course, his brother, Branford, is a great saxophone player. People remember him from his years on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Really musical family. But Wynton said no, his dad was too busy trying to make ends meet, and you know, he didn't have time to like be teaching his kids and you know, harping on, hey, you got to practice and this and that. So it makes me think, you know, like within the case of the Marsalises, maybe it's just genetics, or maybe you see your parent off doing this and you just think, hey, I guess that's what people do, and so I guess I'm going to do it too.
That's what people do, right?
You wonder. But the Brubecks were, yeah, all, you know, and his sons are all really musical, and I know he's recorded some albums with them and toured with them, which is really neat.
How did it happen with you? What attracted you to jazz?
I grew up here in Milwaukee, and I started... We were talking about classical backgrounds. I started playing classical piano, worked with several different teachers here in town. One was a woman named Adelaide Banajinsky, who was known as Miss B, who taught at the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music, who taught many, many classical pianists.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of taught her, I worked with her sort of at the tail end of her teaching career. And she was tough. I mean, there were times where, you know, I would leave crying, a little kid going in and, I wasn't even so little. I was in middle school. I mean, she was tough, you know, Russian school of piano teaching. But I got that classical background, but then started getting interested in jazz. And David Hazeltine was a great jazz pianist who was living here at the time, and I had a chance to study with him at the conservatory. And he pointed me, in the right direction, I feel. And also, my parents didn't play music, but my father had a coffee house that he ran. He was a campus minister for Marquette University, and he ran the coffee house, which is still on 19th in Wisconsin, which was a place that he started in the 1960s that featured a lot of folk music and also some jazz. So we would spend a lot of evenings there, you know, listening to musicians play live. And, you know, musicians would sometimes be around our house. So I think that, you know, being in contact with live music is the thing that really motivated me. And I think it's the thing that continues to motivate, you know, young students, you know, when they have a chance to really hear music that's, you know, of high quality and hear it live. It has such an impact. And it's different than when you hear, say, a recording.
Now you sound like Dave Brubeck's mother, who wouldn't let him listen to the radio, right?
Yeah,
she said,
right,
yeah,
right.
It has to be live music.
Yeah, right. I read that she was a musician. So whether he got his genes from her or if he was just, you know, influenced by her musicality.
Mm-hmm. It must be an extraordinary thing, and one of the attractions to jazz, to be able to bounce off each other, to be able to go into uncharted territory and respond to what somebody else is playing, and then it takes you in a new direction. What a thrill that must be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing for me that I think that I enjoy the most about jazz, is that it's spontaneous music that, you know, like we've talked about with Brubeck, you know, there's a lot of study and background that goes into what jazz musicians do, but when it comes time to play, You know, it's all about being in the moment and trying to be spontaneous and, like you say, reacting to what's going on around you, or maybe you know responding to, you know, the reaction you're getting from the audience or from the other musicians. So it's the thing that makes it really exciting, and here again, it's the thing that makes jazz such a great music to hear live, because you really don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Because
right.
It's never been played that way before.
We're talking about Dave Brubeck this hour of the program. Dave Brubeck, for those of you who don't know, died yesterday. Today would have been his 92nd birthday, and so many of us were captivated by his music, and he's worth talking about. So that's what we're doing this hour with Mark Davis, jazz pianist himself and chair of jazz studies at the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music, also teaches at Cardinal Stritch College, Wisconsin Lutheran College, and Alverno College. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. And let's go to Dave in Appleton. Hi, Dave.
Morning. This is kind of a tribute call, I guess, but I was a 16-year-old alto player in high school when Time Out came out. And from the minute I heard Paul Desmond, I became a hero, along with Brubeck. So I went on to teach instrumental music, jazz, taught jazz history for 38 years after that.
Oh, my.
Just couldn't wait to get to the cool jazz period when I was teaching it, just so I could play Brubeck, introduce the students to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dave brings up an interesting point, I think, just about, you know, Brubeck's appeal, but also his appeal to young people and from what I've read, his wife was the one that really did a lot of work in trying to get Dave out to the colleges, you know, early in his career. In the early 1950s, she called around to over 100 colleges and to try and get Dave, you know, engagements playing on campus, which was really a smart thing to do. It was some smart marketing to try and reach a younger audience.
Yes, it was.
Interesting. Dave says he was a 16-year-old kid when he, you know, heard his music and it grabbed him. He got interested in it and enjoyed it. And, you know, because it's something that continues to be a challenge for jazz today is, you know, how do we keep introducing young people to jazz?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that Brubeck had figured out, you know, back in the 1950s. He had a great marketing plan for that. You know?
And yet the thing that some of those college campuses couldn't figure out and the world couldn't figure out and still can't figure out, it's one of the things about jazz. It's a very accepting kind of music. It really draws on all kinds of cultures and all kinds of backgrounds. And I was reading in the Times piece this morning that there were a number of college deans who told Brubeck, we don't want you playing here because his bass player was black.
Right, right, right. Eugene Wright was his bass player in that classic quartet. Of course, Paul Desmond was white, and Joe Morello, his drummer, were white musicians, but their bass player was African American. And, you know, it makes you, I don't know, it makes me just sort of stop and think, like, wow.
Right.
You know, it's hard to imagine those kinds of things going on, but of course, you know, they went on frequently, and a lot of jazz musicians face that. You know, everybody from Benny Goodman, who, you know, integrated his band and others that they didn't think about, you know, the color of people's skin. They were interested in players that could play. But Brubeck was someone that stood up for, you know, social causes and stood up for, you know, what he was doing and said that's not right. So it's another thing that he should be remembered for.
Yes, he should. Yes, he should. He also, let's branch you into another form of music. I don't know, and I'll ask you this after we hear some of it, Mark, whether you would call this a jazz mass or not, but he did a lot of composition, and this was something that was unusual when you look at all that he did. It's a composition of a mass, and it's titled To Hope.
Oh,
Was this something very unusual for him to branch into composition of a mass? And do you know why he did this?
Yeah, and I've not heard that piece, but it's fun to hear, and it sounded like a little bit of 5/4 time signature in there, so it sounds like a little, you know, distinctive Brubeck, you know, trait in there. But you know, Brubeck, you know, all the different things that he did, you know, it brings to mind someone like Duke Ellington, who also, you know, wrote sacred music. Duke, later in his career, wrote these sacred music concerts, and you know, I don't know if that was an influence for Brubeck, but it certainly may have been, you know, to sort of go in that direction. But, you know, there's a lot of jazz musicians that have done all kinds of things, you know, stylistically, and I think it's because of, like, what you mentioned. Jazz is a music that has you know, a unique ability to pull in all kinds of different influences. You know, there's really nothing that jazz couldn't pull in and use as an influence. So, you know, we have jazz musicians that sound like real bluesy, or some that sound more classically oriented, or some that are using, you know, other ethnic kinds of music like Indian music, or all kinds of things. So, you know, it's always fascinating to hear jazz musicians, you know, go into another realm and then, or genre, and then, you know, bring their jazz sensibility to it.
Yes. Let's go to Joanne in Milwaukee. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. What I really appreciate about hearing jazz again is the fact that there's a lot of saxophone that is featured, and I love that instrument, and you don't hear it in a lot of today's music.
It's a good point. I think most of the music today, you know, is probably more vocal-oriented, you know, and you know, we've got shows like American Idol, and there's really an emphasis on vocals, and you know, the idea of instrumental music is a little abstract for some people, I think. You know, when they don't have lyrics attached to what they're hearing, it's a very abstract thing, and it's like looking at you know, artwork or paintings or abstract paintings. It's something that uses a different part of the brain. You're not thinking about the meaning of the words. You're you know, feeling and enjoying these sounds. It's a very abstract thing for someone to experience.
Mm-hmm. Do you worry about this being a dying art form at all, Mark? We hear about stories every now and then. You always hear them, but then not as many people are listening to classical music, not as many audiences for jazz. Are we cultivating those audiences?
I mean, there's certainly a lot of great stuff going on. There's great young players. You know, there's, you know, if anybody has doubts about, you know, jazz dying, they, you know, they can simply, you know, listen to some of the great young players that are coming up. But I think we should worry about it. You know, I think we should worry that we might, you know, lose our culture, and you know, both classical music and jazz, which jazz is the most American music that we have. It's such a important part of what our country, you know, has produced, and it's unfortunate that so many jazz musicians have to go overseas to get recognition, which is the case. You know, there isn't oftentimes the opportunity here in this country, and we sometimes kind of take for granted this music, you know.
Yeah.
You know, even in a place like Milwaukee, we can go out and hear great local players that are playing at an extremely high level. And, I think it's something we have to keep working at. We have to keep trying to introduce people to the music, and it's important for our society and our culture that this music continues.
I'm with you. We need to pause for a moment, but I want to give you, what should we play? We have a lot of soundtracks, but what's important for us to play? We've got Quiet as the Moon from the Charlie Brown soundtrack. We've got Audrey, The Duke, Just from a solo album, Basame Mucho, Take the A-Train. Any of those strike your fancy? We'll play it coming up.
The Duke is such a beautiful tune. I'd love to hear that.
All right, you're on.
All right.
We'll play it for you in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mm-hmm. Dave Brubeck and the Duke.
Beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those tunes that, you know, I've never met a jazz musician that didn't love that tune. You know, and some of us came to that tune through recording that Miles Davis did. It was back in the 50s, a collaboration with Gil Evans, where they Gil orchestrated that tune, and Miles played it on trumpet. And it's just such a beautiful tune, and the harmonies of that tune are really, really interesting. I mean, in the first 8 bars, he moves through just about every key there is. It's moving all over the place. It's really unique. But yet, here again, real complexity harmonically, but yet he's produced something that sounds very catchy and listenable mm-hmm. at the same time, something that most people could hear a couple times and already be humming along.
Let's go to Jerry, next caller. Hi, Jerry in Milwaukee.
Good morning, Kathleen and Mark. How are you?
All right, Jerry. How are you?
Yeah, you know, I was fortunate. I was a kid that grew up listening to jazz, you know, bebop and progressive jazz, and suddenly I was around when Dave Brubeck came on the scene, and I'd play piano, and what fascinated me was his time signature. That was his hook, as a matter of fact, you know, and I couldn't pat my feet to it. I couldn't understand the beat. Understanding jazz, you know, it was so different. But it was really, I really tuned into him. I remember clearly at the time I was in high school. But I also like to say this, Kathleen and Mark. You know, Mark, I know your teacher, David. And I tried to get David, when I first visited Milwaukee, I was living in New York, I tried to get him to move to New York because, you know, you're ready. Yeah. I did the same thing with Joe Cannon.
Yeah.
And Kathleen, I can say to you that you're talking to a guy, Mark, who is really unappreciated, underrated here in Milwaukee. He's a teacher, but he has chops on the piano. And there's hardly any venue here for what he does. But Mark is an excellent pianist, like his teacher, David. And I just wish there were more venue to expose guys like him, because our other musicians are good in the sound as well, because they're world class, you know, and like Dave Brubeck, you know, but they don't have the opportunity to expose their talents as they should here in Milwaukee.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, Jerry. That's very nice. Nice of you to say that. And you know, I think, like we were saying before, jazz is something that, well, it's something that we just got to keep working at, you know, trying to create venues and trying to educate young people. I do teach at the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music, and at the conservatory we have the Jazz Institute, which is our program where we educate young people as well as adults in jazz, teaching them how to improvise, how to work in jazz groups. We have jazz groups and combos that rehearse and regularly, and it's something that I just keep working at, and others keep working at, trying to create more awareness about the music, because we feel it's a vital part of our culture and what, you know, the cultural scene of the U.S. has produced.
Yeah, we need to do something about it to make sure that we're growing audiences for this, because you don't want to lose it, that's for sure. Brubeck, let's go back to Brubeck. He did a lot of covers of songs that were popular. Let's listen to a little bit of his playing of Take the A-Train and talk about that. And I do want to say we're going to play most of Take 5. Oh, coming up pretty soon. But here's Take the A-Train. Oh, that's a nice arrangement of that. I've always loved that song.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, you know, people remember Duke Ellington's, you know, versions of that, and it was written by his close collaborator, Billy Strayhorn. And, you know, yeah, I sometimes, you know, consider the parallels between, like we said before, Brubeck and Ellington, and they're both players that had a little bit, they were sort of a little off the mainstream path, you know. A lot of players in the jazz world were, you know, following bebop, and, you know, Brubeck was not quite in line with what a lot of other players were doing. He had kind of a different approach, and a kind of a unique approach that he developed that was his own.
Yeah. Let's go to Jerry. Thank you so much for your call. Jim in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. I wanted to mention Ron Kusner. I wonder if you remembered him.
Oh, I remember Ron Kusner.
Oh, sure.
Very,
we used
very
to play
well.
Mainstream jazz on
the Dark Side
nights.
Yes, he was one of a kind.
He played,
Jim.
Mainstream jazz. I don't know if he played Brubeck, but
oh,
I
sure.
miss smooth jazz. I miss all instrumental music, and it's very lacking in today's programming. And it's very sad to see it off the air.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree, and of course Ron, all the years he was a jazz DJ, he introduced a lot of people to great music, and he, you know, did a lot for the music in our area, and yeah, I think it's true. We it's the thing, same thing that classical music faces, that, you know, instrumental music and music that's you know, not pop music is something that we just have to keep introducing people to, and what I find at the conservatory is when students learn a little bit about how it's put together, and they get a few things that they can listen for, suddenly the whole thing opens up for them. You know, at first they might not really be open to it, because some people are coming at music just waiting, you know, wanting to listen to what are the lyrics about. But if someone starts approaching it differently, like what's the drummer doing, or what.
Right.
What meter is this in, or are they improvising solos? You know, different things that someone might start considering. Suddenly it becomes really fascinating to listen to.
Mm. I promise the audience we would play almost all of Take Five, because that's a wonderful way to remember Dave Brubeck. Why is it this song, we have about 15 seconds to hear your explanation, why is it that this song above all others is the one that will outlive him forever?
Well, it was certainly the biggest seller, I know, you know, of works that he did, you know, so we definitely identify it with him, but it's just such a catchy tune, you know, and like we said before, but paired with a complex underpinning, the rhythm of it is complex, the meter, the 5/4 meter is unique, so it's, you know, it's a great pairing of something that's hummable and singable and accessible with something that's got some complexity to it.
Mm. And I guess we should tell people, go listen to some jazz.
Absolutely.
In honor of Dave Brubeck. Go listen. Go support it. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kathleen.
Thank you. Mark is a jazz pianist, chair of jazz studies at the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music. Also is at Cardinal Stritch and Wisconsin Lutheran and El Verno. I promised, here's Take Five. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning for producing this program. We'll be with you again Monday. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.